Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Every so often, Tim and I get notes from people on X or Facebook or whatever saying that we do UFOs too much. Ah, another flying saucer episode. How could you do that? And what we find is you may bring on a researcher who covers a lot of other stuff. He or she is after Bigfoot or ghosts and such. But somehow, UFOs do still get in the picture because they consider that there are lots of different types of strange things going on. So it's not as if we can escape UFOs. But today, I don't think there's any way we can even begin to bring up UFOs because we're going to talk about food. But not just any kind of food, holy food, which has a subtitle, Recipes and Food Ways from Cults, Communes, and New Religious Movements. The guest is Christina Ward, and she is a publisher, editor, and obviously a cook. Welcome, Christina, to the Paracast.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm thrilled to chat with you and Tim today. This is going to be fun.
It really is, and I should put my cards on the table here before we talk about food. And that is, I grew up in a Jewish family, but a Jewish family that passed the first generation of immigrants was not super devout. So my mom, for example, would make me a BLT sandwich, which is hardly kosher. Now, I also should say, as far as being a foodie, I enjoy different cuisines, but my expertise at cooking these days is taking the item out of the refrigerator, sticking it in the microwave, and pushing the start button.
You are not alone. That's very much describing a lot of American cuisine at this point in time.
Right. Like tonight I'm going to get Chinese, but it'll be Chinese that will sit there and cool off as we get ready for the evening, and I'll stick it in the microwave for a couple of minutes. I've not been able to do that too well with pizza. Pizza never seems to come out right if you try to warm it in the microwave. I guess it's meant to be used in the oven for rewarming, but not so much. We can maybe talk about that later. Tim, I think if I visited Tim Swart's house, he'd be the one to cook. Is that right, Tim?
Yes, that's correct. I am the cook of the household.
Christina, to get started with this topic, what led you to a book by the title of Holy Food?
So, holy food, like so many people who focus on research and niche topics, came out of this kind of connection and the obsession. There's an updated subtitle to the book, and it's kind of how cults and communes and new religious movements influenced what we eat. And so the focus is on this idea that we're eating food all the time and we don't know where it comes from. And sure, we think about that as like, oh, do we know the farmer or do we know the store? Is it organic? But my work is beyond that. It's about looking at the strange, and I think it's odd, convergence of cults and these new religious movements that could only happen in the United States and how they had an outside influence on all the food that we eat.
Well, let's get started. How did you get interested in this topic?
At childhood, I think, as we start developing our tastes and our preferences in childhood, I grew up in what's called a kind of a mixed household. My mother was Catholic and my father was atheist. And so with a net tension of the household, you start to realize is where the religion started influencing food decisions of what people were going to eat for dinner, or even the performance aspect of it, of going to, say, a mass on Easter Sunday and people bringing all their food to be blessed and then taken home to be eaten. And that, to me, spurred this really interest about why does God care what we eat?
Okay, I'll ask that question because obviously people who are of the Jewish faith, for example, and other faiths say do not eat pork. Do not mix dairy and meat.
So from the earliest times, from the kashrut, from the kind of collected Jewish food laws, if you actually look at those laws in context of the time period, you are actually keeping yourself and your tribe and your family very safe from food poisoning, from pathogens. When people talk about how filthy pigs are, it's not really about the external, it's the internal. Pork carries a lot of pathogens within the actual meat. Prior to modern antibiotics and modern science, which, you know, thousands of years ago, it would be pretty easy to get something like a trichinosis or other foodborne pathogen through food, and specifically through pork. So by banning pork, you're going to keep your people safe. By not mixing dairy and other meats, you're going to keep your people safe and healthy. All the other rules in the kashrut about cleanliness, too, are all lead to food safety. And so from that originating point, all the other rules and interpretations start to cascade down throughout time.
Now, I understand the matter of cleanliness and avoiding disease, but then we have this other practice where religious leaders will bless or approve a particular variety of food from a particular source. So, for example, to have kosher meat, technically it has to be approved by a board of rabbis. Does that still hold true?
It does. And not just approved by the board of rabbis, it also has to be prepared in a way in accordance to the rules set out by the rabbinical council. The same goes for practitioners and believers in Islam. And their food rules are similar to the Jewish food rules, and it's called halal. So if you go to a halal butcher, it means that the meat has been prepared according to those rules. And those rules come a little bit later. It becomes a way to identify and become a member of that community. And the rules about what's kosher and what's not, and then help people to adhere to the belief practices. And honestly, some of the ideas about what is good and what is bad, what you should eat and what you shouldn't eat, have evolved over time, and as well as then get changed as people, especially in the United States, where we don't have any state religions, people get to go any direction they want. They can be a god, they can hear God, and they get to make up their own rules, which a lot of people did.
We'd like to go into that. Now, let's start talking about specific cuisines and the various laws involved there. But I just wonder, since this is a paranormal radio show, I wonder if anybody who has contacted alleged higher beings also has some kind of food requirement. I'm not thinking in terms of a case from the 60s where a farmer from Eagle River, Wisconsin, by the name of Joe Simonton, allegedly met up with people in a flying saucer that looked Italian. That's interesting. And retrieved or was given some pancakes in exchange for water. I would have assumed that to make the pancakes you would need water, but then what do I know? So have you at all, this is possibly out of your wheelhouse there, Christina, anything about people who claim contact with other beings coming up with various versions of food?
You know, it actually, funnily, I kind of laughed to myself when in your introduction you said, oh, there's no UFOs. We're talking about food. And I was laughing like, oh, no, we'll talk about UFOs. Because the Book of Urantia, with I'm sure your listeners are familiar with, was essentially a book that was channeled from different ascended masters who exist on different planes, on different planets. There's some interpretation there. And within that book that was initially kind of came about, I think, post-World War II, I don't have the dates right in front of me, is people built a number of belief systems around the Book of Urantia that also then incorporated eating systems. And then people are like, well, which ones? I'll give you a really dark one. Heaven's Gate. Heaven's Gate developed a whole system of eating about purifying their bodies for their space brothers, because the space brothers were coming to take them away to, you know, the essentially utopian off-planet existence.
Christina, we'll break here, and we'll get back with more about holy food with Gene, Tim, and Christina. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Call 800-284-0523. Learn how through the Family Medical Leave Act, you can leave your job without losing your job. Locations everywhere. Get immediate help for drug and alcohol problems. Call now. 800-284-0523. 800-284-0523.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Did you get a call or message that mentioned Social Security that made you feel threatened or scared? That is not the Social Security Administration. Social Security will not threaten you, press you for personal information, or demand instant payment. Social Security does not accept payments by gift card, prepaid debit card, internet currency, or by mailing cash. Criminals use these forms of payment because they are hard to trace. Don't fall for it. Hang up, ignore them. Report this criminal activity to oig.ssa.gov.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
The book is Holy Food. Christina Ward joins us, and we're getting to hear how different cults and different peoples who allegedly were in contact with other beings had specific dietary laws. I was also thinking for some reason about this title, where in the 1960s we had this semi-serious TV show, Batman. And Robin would say to Batman, "Holy food, Batman, it's time for lunch."
You know, Gene, I'm glad you got the joke, because there's a couple little Easter eggs and jokes within both on the book cover and in the title. Because holy food, I was thinking about kind of Batman a little bit, but as well as the Hindu notion of prasadam. Prasadam translated means holy food. It is this notion that all food comes from a god, from a spiritual being, and therefore we need to thank those gods. That's why we say grace if you're a Christian before you eat, and we feast and we fast, and we're always aware of God. From the earliest days of manna from heaven, that's actually a real thing. People have looked to explain mysteries by ascribing it to a deity.
Let's return to the thing we were talking about in the last segment about the Heaven's Gate affair and specific dietary requirements sent by these other beings?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the leader at that, Maurice Applewhite, and prior to his partner, I almost said wife, but they weren't really married. Bonnie, they had a lot of ideas about what was health food that really reflected the time period in that late 70s. They actually even published a cookbook in 1983 that was filled with recipes that would be recognized today as like kind of health food recipes, vegan nearly, but definitely vegetarian. And again, it was about purifying the body. And this notion is actually similar to one held by the Seventh-day Adventists, that your body doesn't belong to you. It belongs to God. And therefore, you're only the custodian. So you shouldn't be eating candies, Cokes, and Cheetos. You need to take care of it. Heaven's Gate believed similarly, deriving that information from the Book of Urantia, that again, if they wanted to be taken to the utopian planet, the believers needed to make sure that their carcass, the vehicle, was worthy of transport.
Okay, so what specific requirements can we talk about here with them?
No meat, not a lot of dairy, caloric restriction, meaning, you know, so they weren't ones to have, seconds at dinner. You ate the prescribed amount that you needed just to live, just to keep your body and brain going. Anything more than that was considered, you know, excessive and indulgent and unnecessary. Now, in the Heaven's Gate belief system, they didn't have like an exclusionary punishment per se. It was fairly benign in that sense. But the group shows some of the dangers of these new religious movements and these beliefs, that if you take an illogical premise to a logical extreme, you can get a very bad outcome.
Yeah, it's strange that a lot of the things you say, well, someone wants to watch their weight, be healthy, actually make logical sense. But even people who are bodybuilders will occasionally reach into their refrigerator for something that's maybe not so healthy.
Well, of course, because we're still primal, basic beings, and our lizard brains react really well to salt and fat and sugar. And when those three things are combined, it's almost irresistible.
Speaking of all these combinations, one thing that's very popular, and I have them as well, these protein bars. They're supposed to be very healthy. But other than the extra protein, aren't they still candy bars?
They are. They are. If you look at the sugar content on them, it's quite high. And if you're using it as a meal replacement, okay, you know, but you can't eat other things. And that is, again, a very American idea. Let's take something nominally healthy and make it really hyper palatable and processed and essentially render it unhealthy, but keep the marketing up so people think it's healthy. We do that all the time. If you grew up in the 60s and 70s, you may remember all the advertising for all the food was extra fortified with vitamins, you know, putting the vitamins in everything. Well, that was not really quite true, but people felt that they could eat a piece of Wonder Bread and still be healthy because it had extra vitamins in it.
Well, it was, I guess, the equivalent of adding elements of a vitamin pill to your meal to enhance it, supposedly. And, of course, most foods you get are enhanced, allegedly, with coloring and flavoring and extra things to keep them from spoiling.
Most processed foods are, which is why the current health recommendations are to avoid processed food as much as possible. which actually goes back to what we're talking about with like Heaven's Gate. The Nation of Islam, too. If you followed the Nation of Islam diet, you would be a very healthy person. Some of their food practices would be familiar today. They advocate one meal a day, heavy on beans for protein. Fish is really one of the only meats that you eat. It's a very low-meat diet. And lots of vegetables and greens and whole grains. A very healthy diet. And something that not many people, unless you're studying or a member of the NOI, realize is they also believe in UFOs.
Okay. Now, as far as the first part, I can dig most of that. And I do go to Middle East restaurants, but I get chicken because I don't eat fish and I don't eat eggs. So keep me away from the mayonnaise. That's my problem. You know, it's funny. I used to eat canned tuna fish and I liked it on a bagel, speaking of being non-healthy. But I lost my taste for tuna fish. And that was the last thing that I ate that was considered seafood.
Yeah. And food changes over time. If we look at even like tuna, modern tuna fish, it's packaged differently. It's a different type of fish. So it would actually taste a little different than it would have, say, 30 years ago. Same with bananas. It's a different variety of banana. The modern banana is much, much sweeter than it was, say, 50 years ago.
All right. Well, I guess it makes it tastier and such. By the way, my breakfast, folks, if you want to know, is oatmeal. It's McCann's Irish Oatmeal, to give him a plug. I like it. And a banana. But I don't really pick a specific type of banana. They have two versions at the local supermarket. One is the regular one, like a Dole. The other one is organic. Now, I don't taste any difference. And the regular one is half the price. But as you say, it's sweeter. Does that make it less healthy?
It just means, and calling foods healthy or good or bad, it is a slippery slope. A banana has really good complex sugars that our brains need. Bananas also are very high in potassium. So eating a banana with oatmeal, that's a very healthy breakfast. Now, if you ate 10 bananas a day and maybe 3 Snicker bars and then a 6-pack of Coke, no, that is a very not healthy diet because it's not giving you the nutrients that you need for your body and your brain.
By the way, that protein bar that I eat is supposedly low sugar, okay? So at least in that score, it's better, but it also keeps the calories low so I can have a bigger dinner than I ordinarily have. Anyway, we've got Christina, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
It's obvious. The unthinkable continues. Most Americans know something very wrong is happening. People in charge keep telling you that everything's fine and to stop noticing. But you know better. That's why self-reliant folks are investing in emergency food storage. And you should too. My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, are the ones you can trust. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $200 on each 3-month food kit you purchase. My Patriot Supply also sells solar generators, gravity-powered water filters, off-grid room heaters for when the power goes out, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your items ship that same day and arrive quickly on your doorstep in unmarked boxes. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today. Time is running out to prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
News update.
New this Saturday, we learned Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has been in the hospital since Monday, and no one from the White House alerting the media or the public. Heavy criticism from reporters who cover the Pentagon. Austin reportedly being treated from complications following a minor elective medical procedure. Austin is 70 years old. Another handout to illegal aliens. A report from California that Democrat Governor Gavin Newsom will be giving free health care to another 750 30,000 illegals on top of the 1.1 already receiving it at taxpayer expense. This comes as California is facing its biggest budget deficit ever. One person killed, 12 hurt after a bus crashes in upstate New York on a highway near Lake George. Police say the bus rolled over, detectives investigating the cause of the crash. And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
This is Jennifer Stein, executive producer of The Disclosure Dialogues. You're listening to The Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
The book is Holy Food by Christina Ward, and yeah, I guess there are some UFO connections there, some psychic connections. So we'll persist in this description of the foods and the legends and the purposes. Now, we understand in terms of halal and Jewish kosher meals, not wanting to have ham, bacon, whatever, for cleanliness' sake. What about mixing dairy and meat? I don't understand that completely.
If you think back to this, like, pre-science times, milk, too, unless it was super fresh, I mean, like, fresh from the cow or the goat, is a great vector for pathogens. So you could boil milk and render it safe. But when you, a lot of times recipes that mix milk and meat together don't get up to the required temperatures to kill pathogens. So it's basic. It's just not a good idea if you were living and cooking over a wood fire thousands of years ago to try to cook those things together. Now, what is unknown, and science and as well as history and biblical history hasn't really been able to put a finger on why that became so encoded, not mixing meat and dairy, why that became so encoded into the kashrut, into those food laws. That's still lost to time a bit. There are multiple theories, and they're all a bit spurious, so it's not worth really going into. But what's interesting to me is how that tradition has remained intact for thousands of years. It becomes an identifier. We think about science, modernity, pasteurization of milk, and all the testing and the cooking with meat. There would be no real pathogenic danger to combine those two. Yet, out of tradition and adherence to the religious belief, people who are conservative or different Jews who follow the kashrut food rules don't mix meat and dairy. And that becomes purely driven by their religious belief.
Well, today milk is pasteurized, so we don't have that particular problem to deal with. there's also lactose-free milk for those who have that particular problem. So that's where it stands. It doesn't mean I like cheese. I'm not a milk drinker, but, you know, I'll go for a cheeseburger, although we understand the health considerations. But we're going to get into a lot of these cuisines. I want to hit one more thing before we go on. These days, you go to the local, at least here in Arizona, the local fast food place, like Burger King or Carl's Jr., which is Hardee's in other parts of the country, you can get plant-based burgers. Like Impossible is one company, Beyond is another company. And you look at those things, and it's a mixture, an assemblage of different ingredients to make it seem and act like meat. Now, meat is meat, except for, you know, whatever things they do to preserve or keep the insects away when the source of the meat, the chicken or the beef, is out there pasteurizing or whatever. But with all the ingredients in this plant-based meat to look like the real thing, is that a negative?
You know, there's negatives to everything that we eat. We can take the most kind of pure food and turn it into something terrible. So in the case of fake meats, those were actually started and popularized by the Seventh-day Adventists, who were the owners at one time, they recently sold it, of Morningstar Farms. They currently own the Worthington brand. If you are a buyer of kind of fake hamburger or other fake meat products, you'd recognize those brand names. So they're primarily a combination of soy and pea proteins. The challenge is, and what makes it unhealthy is, as you mentioned, Gene, is a lot of the additives and the process. So you're not really eating just a pure pea, you're eating a processed pea made and shaped and flavored with additives to kind of taste beefy. So in and of itself, it renders it not as healthy. But as Oscar Wilde said, moderation in all things, including moderation. So compared to, say, a greasy all-beef cheeseburger and plant-based protein cheeseburger, dollars to donuts, when you compare the two, there's fewer calories and fewer kind of the fats that can really cause problems for people's cardiovascular systems in the plant-based burger. But again, there's also problems with it. As much as there's planet considerations on global warming with all the cattle farming, so too industrial farming for plants. And so this is all super nuanced when we think about the implications for both our bodies and for our planet and for the culture at large.
Also, the plant-based meat industry is still fairly young, and I guess they have to still do a lot of work. As I said, the flavoring is not quite the same thing. So the Carl's Jr. Beyond Burger, and this is the last time I had it, which is a couple of years ago, tasted sweeter than the real thing, the Star Burger. In terms of Burger King, the Impossible Whopper had less flavor than the main Whopper, which to me is pretty bland. So there you go. They can't match brand for brand the exact flavors.
Oh, give it time. I'm sure there's flavor scientists working right now for the perfect combination of chemicals to make anything taste like a hamburger.
So you weigh the chemicals against the fat and beef and you say, which is going to kill me first?
It's about choices. Here's an interesting kind of thought exercise. With climate change and how our planet changes, is there are more pathogens that are spreading around, thinking about like tick-borne pathogens, because one of the side effects of a tick-borne disease, of many of the tick-borne diseases, is the alpha-gal. And alpha-gal is a protein allergy, a meat protein allergy. So if you have alpha-gal, you cannot actually process red meat at all. And so having something like a plant-based alternative would give people who cannot process meat protein an opportunity to get protein and enjoy a hamburger without dying.
Well, I could see there you have to make some substitutions.
No, I was just saying, that is a part of our modern culture and being American, being spiritual, being a food eater, is everything is a trade-off and everything is about making choices.
So the key here, of course, is that you'd like to live a decently long life. And if you watch your diet and don't stick it with McDonald's hamburgers 3 or 4 times a day, it'll hopefully help you survive. Now, when it comes to food, Tim is the expert here. He's the guy who cooks mostly for his family. although you warm up stuff that you cooked several days before. So how about taking over some questioning based on your expertise?
Well, being a Midwesterner, you know, our diets are pretty, and I don't want to say normal, I don't want to say bland, but, you know, I mean, we don't have a lot of exposure to fresh seafood, so, you know, it's always frozen and things like that. But, you know, one of my questions is, based on your research, and of course, you know, we can only know this from historical writings and what's been, you know, dug up and, you know, inscribed on cuneiforms, what were some of the first examples of, cookbooks? Because, you know, eating and food is such a universal thing that I would think that if we knew how to interpret some of the, French prehistoric wall paintings, there'd be a cookbook in there somewhere. So, I mean, how far back, I mean, do they go?
Forever. As soon as people could start making a record of their activity, they started noting recipes. Some of the earliest ones, there is an example a few years ago of in Egypt, they translated a few of the Egyptian pictoglyphs, and it was a recipe for beer. And a couple very entrepreneurial scientists actually translated that recipe and brewed beer and made beer based off this, like, thousands of year old Egyptian beer recipe.
We'll find out what that beer was like in a few moments.
I didn't say it.
Jean, Tim, and Christina, you're in.
The Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
If you love mysteries, you'll love these two books by Tim R. Swartz and Sean Castile. In Mimics, The Others Among Us, you'll learn about the strange beings that can look like us, but are not. In Alien Artifacts, Incredible Evidence of Exotic Material from UFO Encounters, you'll see the hard evidence of UFOs that has been ignored or even hidden. These books will definitely blow your mind, and both are now available on Amazon.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy.
created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices. Our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
I would not suggest or begin to suggest that Tim had some beer before the show begins. But let me tell our listeners very quickly, since we're talking about ancient beer recipes. Do you know, in my long years on this planet, I have never, ever tasted beer. Never. Seriously.
Okay. I believe it.
And well, I believe it too, because it happened.
I'm not a fan of beer. I mean, and it's one of those things, it's not to everybody's taste, but yet it was a really critical thing to do. If we think back again in pre-science days, water was not necessarily always drinkable. And before we had, again, chemical additives and water's coming out of the tap, you always had to boil water. And a good way to ensure that you always had a safe supply of water was beer. Small beer is usually what it's called. And so it's a super low alcohol beer. It was given to children and women and everywhere, especially on the American West, on the frontiers. Everybody drank a little bit of alcohol because it was a way to get the necessary liquids in you and not the pathogens.
Would that alcoholic content make you a little less aware or what?
Well, there's a couple of historical wags who have suggested that essentially up until the 1920s, most Americans were drunk all the time. And statistically, especially post-Civil War and that the Great Westward Expansion, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, sadly, a large percentage of the population, I think it's not quite 50%, but it's over 30% of the people were essentially either addicted to opiums or alcoholics.
I remember a story that we did one time of a saddle maker, a small saddle maker factory in southern Indiana that was established in the late 19th and then continued on into the 20th century. The factory actually provided its workers a bucket of beer for lunch.
Yeah.
Every day. I mean, that was common.
Yeah, that would have been the equivalent of giving people like the water cooler.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's interesting, Tim, I'm going to go back to something that you had mentioned about being a Midwesterner and that the food kind of culture is a bit bland. You know, there's a religious reason for that. If you look at the Midwest and who settled it, is the United States was initially settled by religious extremists, Protestant fundamentalists, many of them coming from Germany, and they brought their cuisine with them. And traditionally, it was, you know, very stodgy, very meat, potatoes, and cooked long. But in addition to just the regional cuisine of Germany that folks brought over to the Midwest, they also brought this fundamentalist Protestant notion of no spices, because they believed that spices could excite the sexual urgings of people, and it could affect someone's temper. And so you wanted to keep food very bland so everyone stayed very calm.
Well, there's actually not too far from where I live, maybe about, you know, an hour and a half a drive, there is a community called New Harmony. And it had been established by a utopian community called the Harmonists, I think is how they were called. And they actually were the opposite of that. They believed in good food. The leader actually made fun of some of the, I guess, earlier disciplines that, you know, said that you should only eat cabbage and beans and things like that. But instead, they told their congregation to eat and enjoy life, especially kids. Kids should eat like 5 meals a day. So yeah, I found that really interesting.
So New Harmony has a fascinating history, and I go into it in the book, because it was started, one, by a German fundamentalist group that in New Harmony, Indiana, and it was their offshoot commune that they built. They originally settled in Pennsylvania, and they were winemakers, which was common at the time. The land in Indiana wasn't so great for making a wine and growing wine grapes. So he sold it, so that the new the Harmonists sold it to Robert Owens. And that's who you're talking about, who was a secular, non-religious, but of that time period in the 1840s-ish, 1830s, this idea of a utopian movement of we could live communally and we could all enjoy the best of life if we just pitched in together. And he bought the old Harmony settlement and called it New Harmony. And what that was joined in with some of those ideas from Charles Fourier about he who invented this notion of like gastronomy in the sense of deriving absolute pleasure from food. And many of the new religious movements, including, say, the Hare Krishnas, all look at food opposite of the fundamentalist Protestant groups as a singular source of joy that God gives to you. And so it's almost, it's a sin the other way. If you don't enjoy your food, you are sinning against God.
At the beginning of your book, you've got a statement. Let me look at this here. This comes from the Babylonian Talmud. Whoever needs, come and eat. And I like that. And that really you see a lot of societies that really embrace that idea.
Yeah, absolutely. When we think about sharing food, it is an act of trust. If I give you a cookie and you take it, you're trusting that I'm not going to poison you with that cookie. And so we build that bond together when we're sharing food. And it helps us build our community. And then when you have the food rules, is like Gene and I were talking about at the start of our conversation, that also helps identify our tribe. Who is a member of our safe community and who belongs and who can we bring in? Now, if I start sharing my food with you, if you're hungry and I bring you a meal, you're more willing to listen to my spiel about my revelations of what the Space Brothers have told us or what God told me while I was sitting underneath a tree. And so food is very disarming for people. When we share a meal, we bond closer together.
Well, that's just it. You know, I mean, I've traveled around the world quite a bit, and a lot of these the rural places that we would go to, there would be a number of families who wanted us to come and eat with them and were just so happy when we could. And it was just, I mean, some of these families I still remember, and a few even, you know, remain in communication with for a number of years. And it was just that openness, come in, share a meal with us, that is, it's that universal appeal, isn't it?
It is. It's so much so that in many Hindu traditions, in the Sikh tradition, in many, many of the Islamic sect traditions, is hospitality. Offering people meals and being very kind to strangers is encoded in the spiritual practice. Now, it's not maybe written in like the actual holy book, but in the supplemental cultural practices and commentary, the idea of offering a meal and sharing a meal is part of their religious practice. So if you're a believer and your culture has that practice, you're almost looking for a stranger, because that earns you some really goodwill, and you have made God very happy if you've shared your dinner with a stranger.
You know, for some reason, it may be obvious, when I hear this, I remember when I first met my first wife's parents. Now, listeners have heard Geneva on the show. She's remained a friend, even though our marriage ended after a few years. But I remember when I first flew to her home near Birmingham, Alabama, parents thought I was some kind of weirdo. This Jewish guy from New York, does he sleep in the coffin at night? We don't know. I mean, they wondered, what was this person that her daughter had hooked up with? So my late mother-in-law, or ex-mother-in-law, she would cook meals traditional to a Southern family, like black-eyed peas and everything else, and it was just delicious. I always enjoyed the fact that she'd spent hours cooking this stuff. It was really great. A lot of it was healthy, and I felt very close to them as a result of this. I think originally she was doing it out of respect to her daughter's wishes. I think later on she grew to tolerate me. because she sent me instant messages over the years saying, even though you didn't stay married to my daughter, you are still my son-in-law. And I just think, isn't that nice? And I think the meals we had, it is. And I think the meals that we had really made me feel closer to them, because it made me feel like I was part of the family.
And if we think of like the contra example, I think we've all been in a situation, whether it's like a extended family holiday dinner or even sharing a meal at a restaurant, where there's the one person who wants to send back every dish, doesn't like anything, doesn't want to eat. And you can think back and remember the kind of tension that kind of person, that behavior causes around a shared meal.
Let us break here. We'll have more of this with Christina, Tim, and Gene. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.